So this is the last of these lectures. Not a moment too soon, right? Is that the start real slow and then fizzle out altogether. But that's, yeah. I should clarify a point from conversations at the after the lecture on yesterday. I should rewrite this formula, the Lubin Tate formula. So F gamma. So this is height n, and this is perfect of characteristic P. Well, what's the Lubin Tate formula say? It says that pi zero of the deformations of F gamma. So that's a functor defined on local rings, and I wrote it was this way. So that's a functor which assigns to any art and local ring this functor. The n minus first Cartesian product. So that's what that formula actually meant. And from this I was able to say that this is equal to of the Witt vectors. So for each one of these points here, I get a coordinate there. That's where that formula came from. If you choose a p-typical version, you can write these are the usual u1 up to un minus 1. Those sort of zero-degree versions of vn, vi. And then the theorem was that this thing, which I wrote as a groupoid, but is in fact discrete. So this is this ring R, F gamma. In order to get this isomorphism, you have to choose something. So it's better not to. It's not a functor at that point. But this was to the formal neighborhood here. And I chose a particular one at this point. This is the Honda formal group law, and this is the algebraic closure. So this, I wrote this was Galois with a certain Galois group. G of F P bar gamma N. So that it means in particular it's atoll and, or pro-atoll actually. So atoll surjective. And gamma N torsor. The universal cover. If you think of these things topologically, it's actually the universal cover. That's all right, that was the theorem. This assignment here sent there were triples, G, I, phi. And this just went to G. And this group of pairs, sigma lambda, just acts on here. It just acts on the I and the phi. It doesn't move the G. So this is obviously equivariant. It passes through the quotient. So let's look. And the corollary, which I may never have actually stated, was that the quasi-coherent sheaf on whatever that means, I have to be a little careful because of all the topologies here, on H n hat is equivalent to the following data. To a R gamma n module, a topological module with a continuous action of G. Remember, this was the Galois group of over the automorphisms of gamma n. So these things are known in the topology as Merava modules. So the corollary is that whatever sheath means on this thing, it's equivalent to a Merava module. All right. So that was clearing the wreckage of last time's talk. So before I march on, are you ready for me to march on? That's the question. So there are two algebraic results I want to end with. And they are, let me label them. Theorem one is the chromatic convergence. Which I'm going to state this way. If, I'm going to put a topological analog over here. If F is a finitely presented quasi-coherent sheaf on MFG, oh, I should set the stage a little. And I'm working at a prime. I may start dropping this. Then, let's see, I've got F here, so I forgot to remind you what these things were. I'll do that in a second. This is an equivalence. So, I might remind you that I've got this height filtration. And so forth. UN is here. So this is height less than or equal to N. And this map here, this is IN. So what I'm doing in this is pulling back the UN, and then that's exact. And then I'm pushing it forward. That's not exact, so I have to derive it. So this thing is a chain complex, a co-chain complex. And then they fit together as I climb up over N, and I'm claiming I get F back. That's the, huh. Okay. So the topological analog is homotopy theory. This may not be topology. if LN is LEN, is localization with respect to Johnson-Wilson theory. Johnson-Wilson theory. Then, and if X is a finite CW spectrum, then the natural map from here to here to the homotopy inverse limit is localization at P. You're only going to see P complete information or P local information this way. So that's what that's going to happen. So this is the Ravenel-Wilson, Hopkins-Ravenel chromatic convergence. The leap from here to here is, you use this as input for this, you need a vanishing line in some spectral sequence to finish the argument. Okay. That's the difference. All right. The second theorem I'd like to tell you about is the fracture square. Yeah.
Is there something else you need from the algebraic?
You need, so this is saying that, for example, in terms of co-modules, that the inverse limit of BP star of these things is that. But now you need to show that BP star of the inverse limit is equal to the inverse limit of the BP stars. Well, no, so that you're asking whether the homology of a homotopy inverse limit is the inverse limit of homology. So that's, in general, that's a relatively delicate question. So you need something to make that go. And so the thing they use is a vanishing line argument in some spectral sequence. You know that'll happen if as long as there can't be sort of infinitely many differentials somewhere. And that's that would take me an hour to get into, but that's not. In the whole nilpotence game, they're always developing vanishing line arguments, and it's the same input as all the other. All right, the other theorem I want to tell you about is the fracture square, which is what? So I've reduced the figuring this thing out to figuring out this thing. So let's let E be a quasi-coherent sheaf on UN. Okay, and now I've got this picture. UN is contained in UN minus 1, contained in UN, and the complement is this thing I call HN. So this is the closed complement. And this is open. And let's call this something also. Let's call this J, just for fun. Okay. Now, let's see. This is defined by the vanishing of some ideal. And I hope I have the indices right. IN, which is locally of the form PU1 up to UN minus 1. Same U's that are in this theorem. So, in order to be exactly of height N, I need to know that the VIs, which in the degree zero thing are U's, vanish, and that the last one, VN, or UN in this thing, is invertible. Okay, but just being in here means that something in here, this ideal, has to be invertible. And if I demand that these all vanish, then that forces it to be there. So the open complement is the things where this ideal becomes the whole ring. Okay, this notation, these ends and the various ends and when it's n minus 1 and not, has bent my brain for 30 years now, and I have to look it up each time. That's the, but I think I'm corresponding. Yeah. All right, well, in between here and here, there's a whole bunch of stuff. Just for now, I'll call it this. It's the infinitesimal neighborhood. So this is defined by the invanishing of I end of K. So what's completion mean? So I'll give you the definition and then write down a formula. If I want to define the completion of E, by the formula E completed at IN is equal to the usual inverse. Let's see if I need a formula for this. I left it. So So let's call that inclusion FK just for fun. So you pull back there and then you push forward again. So that's terrible. What does that mean locally? If you're thinking just in terms of a module, this is equal to the same thing as saying M mod I to the N K. And now that's a module over O mod I to the K. And then this just means, think of it as a module over O, over the big ring. Okay. So this is the same thing as this. Locally. So that's a formula for the completion, but in fact, I'd like you to believe this is actually just the usual completion with respect to an ideal. If that isn't bad enough, in order to get a true statement, you actually have to derive this. We need a derived version of completion. We need the left-derived functors. Which I'll give you a formula for in a minute. Which I'm going to write L-I-N-E. So how do you do that? Well, you have to resolve E somehow. It turns out in this setting you can resolve E by locally free sheaves, and that's good enough. That's a theorem of Hovey's, actually. In general, in algebraic geometry, you can't do this, but in this setting you can by Hovey. This is a, if you know the Adams condition on Hopf algebraids, this is a consequence of that. All right, so then I now can state theorem 2. And it's topological analog. This is the fracture square. There is a homotopy pullback square, Cartesian if you like. Someplace in where do homotopy pullback squares exist? Probably in some model category, but let me just say in the derived category, of quasi-coherent sheaves on UN takes E, and why is this? I pull it back to UN minus 1 and then push it forward again, and I take this derived completion. So I've got the information from UN minus 1, and I've got an information from some formal neighborhood of HN, and now I have to glue them together. I have to take the piece where they overlap, and that's this. All right, this is a fairly... This is not a surprise to students of Atal sheaves, for example, that there's some sort of decomposition like this. The topological analog is topology. If X is an LN local spectrum, maybe I'll call it Y this time, local spectrum, EN local spectrum, then there is a pullback square, there's a homotopy pullback square. I guess I've already assumed it's local. So I localize it at n minus 1, and then I complete it. Well, that's taking localization with respect to Moravec K theory. And then this diagram shows. And again, the only place I know of in print that this is, you can find this, is in Hovey's paper on the chromatic splitting conjecture. It's in the notes in the Czech conference. The proofs of these things, two things are the same. It doesn't mean one implies the other, it's just that the argument's exactly the same. That's the, you run the same tape and it produces the same. You just start with a different input slot. Okay. All right, so those are the two algebraic theorems. These are both consequences of the fact that the ideal IN is locally a regular ideal. It's relatively formal consequences of that fact. Okay, so maybe I should write that down, as you'll see. Theorems 1 and 2 are both consequences of the fact that if spec A to UN or even to M, let's just MFG is flat, then IN of G is generated by a regular sequence. That's the easy part of Landweber exactness. Indeed, if G has a coordinate, has a p-typical coordinate, and the p-series P of G of X is equal to again, this is the associated formal group law. Then IN of G is equal to simply and this is the standard Landweber condition that those form a regular sequence. Now I want to explain that statement to you. That's probably the rest of the talk, actually. Both of these theorems are proved by looking at the fibers of these maps. Okay? So in that case, so let me tell you how to do that. Let's see if I can keep theorem 1 and 2 on the board long enough to change them into something else. So that brings me to local cohomology. Let's see, this is a very general setup. I've got some M, I've got some Z inside it, which is closed. I suppose I'll call that J. And then I've got the complementary open, I guess I'll call I. So this is so this is defined by some ideal. By I. So here's where I vanishes, and here's where you get the whole thing. Okay. Let me just set up the generalities. In the end, it will be. Okay. I think in order to get a decent theory, you need reduced. I've got more than reduced. I've got this incredibly nice ideal. Okay. You want me to stick it in? So the experts say I should write reduced here. And I'm not proud. Okay, so if F on M is locally, is quasi-coherent, then the local cohomology sheaf is defined by sheaf, should give it a name, gamma ZF. It's defined by the exact sequence, 0. So I pull it back, I guess I'm calling it I. I pull it back to U and then push it forward again. So that is supposed to be obviously good for us, right? Because that's where we're pushing back and pushing forward all the time. Okay? So locally this looks like if V, and M is open, I just have F of U. I have to tell you what R gamma Z F of U, this is V. V is. And when you work out the formula, that just means you have an exact sequence. It's the things that vanish when you restrict to V. This symbol, if you're working with stacks, you have to interpret this symbol, right? It's the pullback. All right, so we derived this, of course, being good homotopy theorists. This theorem, definition like this is just begs to be derived. So we get a distinguished triangle, which is also known as a fiber sequence. So I've got F in the middle here. I've got R, I star, F. And then there's some sort of derived version. And it's no longer exact, of course. It's a fiber sequence, so the usual game is. And I always mess up the numbers here. This is the same thing Mike was talking about in his lectures. You're a topologist, you're raised with chain complexes rather than co-chain complexes. And when you stick the numbers in here, I think it's this, right? Where our HS of C of 1 is supposed to be HS plus 1 of C. And you can figure out what the shifts are based on that. Okay. All right. Let's see. So now I'm going to restate my two theorems. There's theorem one, there's theorem two. Let's see, I haven't lost them yet. So let's look at theorem one. I've got the following picture. I've got F equals, and I pull it back to this guy. Push, so that's back down to UN. And then I can look at it this way. That's restricting to UN minus one. And I'm worried about what's happening here as n goes to infinity. Well, since I got equality in the middle, I'm good with that. The complementary close to un minus 1 is mn. That's life, right? This is height less than or equal to n minus 1. And this is height greater than or equal to n. I didn't make up these numbers. It's just the way it works. So I've got this picture, and these are fiber sequences. So theorem, the next door neighbor to theorem one is the following, that for large n, this map is actually contractible. So what's the best way to say that? Where'd it go? So let F0 be a finitely presented quasi-coherent sheaf. So here's the actual theorem. On BP to the K, so this is these P to the K buds, right? So I showed, or I stated last time, that any finitely presented sheaf can be realized as a pullback of such a thing. Yeah, I'll remind you of that in a second. Then, and let Q, again, tensor ZP. I left off the ZP there. Be the projection. This is terrible. I'm going to do something awful here just so I don't go onto two boards. I'm going to write it here and then put it up. No, that's not going to work. Then R gamma, RMN gamma. Is null homotopic. For N bigger than K. So the point to remember here is that if F on MFG, tensor ZP, is finitely presented, then F is isomorphic to Q star F0 for some such F0. So the real theorem is that it's not the finitely presented part, it's the fact that it's pulled back from this one of these BPKs. That doesn't have much topological content. These buds don't have, they're not something that arises via some cohomology theory. Right? That's, the, as far as I know, sort of the wrong side of, you know, you're better in things over the moduli stack of formal groups rather than under it. And that's the, but this is the algebra that gets used. So I claim that theorem, this thing, the neighbor of theorem 1, implies theorem 1, because as soon as these fibers become null homotopic, then the thing becomes sort of pro. The things become pro-equivalent. Okay. So now theorem 1 follows. As the two towers, F and RI are pro-equivalent. There isn't a map back at any level, but there's maps back along the ladder. Okay, that's the way it works. All right. What's the analog of theorem 2? That's easier. Where'd it go? There is theorem two. So theorem two follows immediately from the neighbor of theorem two. Which is that if E, any E on UN is quasi-coherent, then, well, let's see, the appropriate local cohomology, which in this case is, I hope I stated it correctly, HN. So that's the complement of UN E to R gamma HN of L I N E is an equivalence. So that means in this pullback square, in this square, I've checked that the fibers are equivalent. So that that means the square was Cartesian, homotopy Cartesian. All right. This guy here does have a topological analog, topology. The if X is a spectrum, then I've got a fiber sequence MNX, LNX, into LN minus 1X. You've probably seen this notation. This is the so-called monochromatic piece. That corresponds exactly to this. This is the analog in topology. And for example, in Hobby's paper on chromatic convergence, this is the thing he focuses on. Or in Hobby and Strickland, their AMS memoir number 666, this plays a significant role. MNX is the nth. I'm just going to give you a slogan here, chromatic piece. For some reason, I never have any trouble remembering the citation for that particular. All right. How are these proved? So these are proved via something called Greenlee's May duality. This is this stealth paper of theirs on completions and such in Journal of Algebra. This was picked up by a variety of people. If you prefer topology, there's a nice paper by Dwyer and Greenlee's fairly recently. If you prefer algebraic geometry, the standard reference for the applications to the more global setting are there's three authors whose name are not on that sheet, but on another one. So the second two authors are Lopez and Lippmann, Joe Lippmann. The first author is one of these Spanish names, and I never know. Alonso Tario. So it's a Spanish double last name, and I never know which the one they actually use in practice. And that's and if you look up famous Spanish bicycle racers, you look up Miguel Indurain or something, and that's not his name. He has another name, and That's, his real name is something else. All right. Both of these papers are really nice, actually. Worth taking a look at. So let me try to explain this, because some very familiar modules appear at this point. So let's define some sheaves. So for students of topology, what I'm going to do is write down a version of the chromatic spectral sequence. So the first sheaf is sheaves on MFG, and let me drop the ZP. So the first one is this one, the structure sheaf. Well, I can pull back to I0. And then push forward again. And then I'm going to get a sheaf which I'm going to call O1 I infinity. So that defines this guy. What is U0, by the way? U0 contained in MFG, I haven't belabored this. This is the place where I1, which is just equal to the ideal P, where that's the whole ring, okay? So if I have spec A to here, then I1 of G is equal to A. In other words, P is invertible, right? So that's this is simply equal to U0 is equal to MFG. So another way to write this, if you would prefer, is I can write this as O1 over P. All right, and now I continue. I've defined there's an inductive argument. Into IN star. And this defines O. Let me give you a local description of these things. So again, let's suppose spec AG into MFG is flat and has a p-typical coordinate. Then, of course, O of G is just equal to A. I0 star, well, let's do it this way. This is equal to A of 1 over P. This is just equal to A. And this we call this, right? All right. What happens on the next one? You take the next one. So this is OI1 infinity. of A, this goes to OI, O1 star, well, I just told you that I might as well write this thing. The thing you invert now is U1. This thing's supported on M1, so they get to pull it back to U2 and then push forward. It just amounts to inverting U1. Okay. And then, so this is... So these are these famous modules that come up in Miller, Ravenwell, and Wilson, for example. So I'm going to claim that OIN infinity of A is A mod P infinity. And it's defined by this. It's sort of things where you're allowed sort of infinitely many denominators in these things, but you're not allowed numerators. And that's if you've ever done a local cohomology calculation, these are very familiar objects. These are the, and that corresponds to the following theorem, which I should put where. I really boxed myself in here. So. It's important enough that maybe I'll put it here under this. Proposition. What does this have to do with cohomology? Well, here's the result. I take the F-derived functor of the inclusion, IN infinity. So notice in doing this definition, I only used I didn't use the higher derived functors of this, right? I just used the zeroth one, okay? And it turns out to be a good thing. This is equal to zero for S bigger than equals to zero. From this it follows, never put a conclusion in the statement of a result, but it follows immediately that this guy, the thing that's coming up into these fibers of these various things, this is a slight variation on it. So the way to write it in terms of chain complexes is that this means that this thing, i.e., the only non-zero thing for this is Rn, is the nth derived functor, and it's equal to that. So RS. That's what that means. The proof is I won't give it because it's too easy. After you've unwound all the definitions, it's sheaved, so we can work locally. And if you use this description, you just see that it pops right out. And this is the input for Greenlee's and May-Duality. This uses the regularity. So this follows from the fact that IN is locally a regular ideal. These guys have a generalization where you just require the ideal to be pro-regular in some sense, right? It's a formal, you're just working in sort of formal neighborhoods so you can, as long as some power of the ideal is regular, then you're in business, okay? All right. Now what does Greenlee's May duality say? What am I left with here? Well, let's put it here. This is a theorem to these guys, more or less. They only give sort of a ring version, but again, you just beat it all down to rings and some local calculations, so the proof becomes the same. I have to tell you what this thing is. Well, it's equal to this. So this N is, these are chain complexes, and this N is to tell you where to put in the various shifts. Okay? And that follows from this. There's a similar statement for HN, which I won't write down. And the derived completion, if you didn't believe my definition before, you can take this as the definition. You know this, these results in some sense. For example, you know that the derived completion with respect to P is the various X groups of Z mod P infinity into your favorite abelian group. Right. That's the that's the basic result. So there's this shift in here. So the left derived functors of, say, completion with respect to P of some module M is equal to X, and you have to get the numbers in the right order. In this case, it's 1 minus S over Z. If you're completely lost, you can work this out. You can do some examples in this. Put in this module itself and see what you get. That's in Bousfield-Khanna. I'm sure they learned it from somewhere else. The point in Greenlee's maze, you just need a regular ideal. And then the N here is the length of the number of elements that generate the ideal. That's so in this case, it's 1. Okay. All right. Let me give you an outline of the proof of Theorem 1, and then I'll just say that the proof of Theorem 2 is similar. And that's... And then we'll stop. How's that sound? Why is this called duality? Well, you've written a right-derived functor as a tensor. This is the derived tensor product. You've written a right-derived functor as a left tensor functor, a left-derived functor, and you've written a left-derived functor as a right-derived functor. Dwyer and Greenlee's have a statement where you don't need regular, but then, of course, you have to replace this thing by something which isn't concentrated in 1 degree anymore. You have to have some great big Kolmogorov molecule. Okay. All right, so let's look at proof of theorem. The neighbor of Theorem 1. Okay. So we have exact sequences. Sequences which go like this, right? And I'm going to write it 1 over UN at this point, just for fun, okay? All right, and now let's see. We're looking at this map over here on the right. So we've got R gamma M n plus 1 F into R gamma M n of F, which I just told you was tensor L This is over OFG. I'm going to put the tensor ring in here for a moment. F into O and infinity of N. Tensor OFG LF and equals. And let's see. This is the connecting homomorphism from the short exact sequence. It goes down because you're working with derived functors of tensor products, so you have chain complexes. Okay. So this is the boundary equals the connecting homomorphism up the sine to the homomorphism from here. That's easy to check. All right. Now suppose I've got some pullback from the P to the K bud. So now I've got over on this VP to the K. And I pull this back. Then let's see, let's put a star by this one, then we can rewrite as, I'm going to be a little sloppy here. To make this really a true statement, you'd have to decorate some of these symbols with things with stars on them, but let's not do that. And what goes back here? Well, this thing I called U to the N tensor L. Now, if N is large and K is small, there's no UN on VP to the K. This has finite information, and it only has information on U's up to UK, or UK minus 1, whatever it is. So then I want to claim ON minus 1. The split's surjective. So in fact, I get a retraction here. So this map has to be zero. And the reason this is true is that a formal group, let's just write it in terms of formal group laws, my buds, of length P to the K use only up to UK minus 1. Or maybe UK, just to be safe. And here N's larger, so this just as a module over that ring, this thing becomes split. Just to make your confusion completely specific, what am I saying here? You can do it in terms of polynomial algebras. If I take, suppose A is equal to the BP ring, the infinite one, okay, then I'm looking at this picture here. One over UN. UN infinity into zero. And that's certainly not split as a module over this ring, but it is split over ZP U1 up to UK. If K is less, K minus 1, K is less than 15. Because that just involves the first, these things, UN isn't even. In fact, there's a module over this ring. These things just become direct sums of various things. If that's the key algebraic observation. All right. Theorem 2 is it's not exactly the same. It's sufficient to work locally, and then you can work with Kazul complexes. And then you just read it off from that. Theorem 2, just to complete your notes, work locally. How do you spell Kazul? I'm missing a letter. What's that? SZ? All right, I think that's enough.